Okay, we're going to start the tap of Nun Dalet Amud Aleph, four lines down. Amar Shmuel, Haiman de Pashach Dikla, Adaita de Dikla, Koni. Adaita de Chayuta, Lo Koni. So a person is trying to take possession of a property over here. So here it's, say, the Nixtei Ager. He wants to take possession of it. So how is he going to establish Chazaka here? He goes ahead and he prunes branches off the tree. Now, there are two reasons that you can take branches or pick off branches from a tree. One is for the benefit of the tree, zomer, right? Actually pruning to the benefit of the tree. The other possibility is that you need the wood, right? It's zomer v'tzorach leitzim. You need the wood. You want the wood. You're not interested in the tree's growth. You're interested in the wood that's there. So now, Shmuel distinguishes between the two in terms of the ability to make a kinyan over here. Why? The one who prunes a tree or cuts the branches off a tree, if it's a daitadikla, if he's doing it for the benefit of the dekel, I mean the benefit of the tree itself, then kani. In that case, the chazaka or his ability to establish ownership here works because he's working the land. He's doing something to the benefit of the tree that's growing the land. But a daitadikhyutav, he's taking the branches off to feed his animals, to use his animal feed, to use for other purposes, then lo kani. So Gemara says, hey chidami, how do you know? How do you know which one he's doing?
He makes it. There's relevance for Shemitah, I think.
Yes, yeah, there's relevance for Shemitah as well, very good. So, Echidami, what's the case over here? How do you know what's his intent? He comes and he tells us, no, I did it for the tree. But how do you know? So, Shoko mihai giso, mihai giso, if he prunes from the tree evenly all around, then right, we can say, if he says to us that he was doing it for the benefit of the tree, we believe him because he did it in a manner which would indicate that he's trying to prune the tree and to benefit the tree. Now again, if he says specifically, I took it from animals, it doesn't matter that he took it from all around. Now, otherwise, adata dikla. Kula mechad gis, on the other hand, if he takes all the wood or all the branches from one side, then adata dchiyuta. Then it's mukha milsa, that he's doing it for the benefit of his animals and he's not doing it for the benefit of the tree because he's not pruning one side of a tree or taking all the branches from one side of a tree is not benefit of the tree. So in that instance, we're going to say, sorry, even if he says that was doing it for the benefit of the tree, we're not going to agree or acquiesce to that position because it's mukha milsa. What his actions prove that he was doing otherwise. Vamar Shmuel, hai man de zachi zichya, adata de aro, a person who goes ahead and clears off the field. He's taking away everything that is on the field, meaning that he's taking away all the branches, the wood, and the bed, weeds that are there. So if he does it, adata de aro kani. Again, if he does it for the purpose of the land, to clear off the land, to make it usable, then, or plantable, then he's konet. Adati de tzive, if he's picking it up because he needs the wood, he needs firewood, and he's picking up the branches that are on the ground, or what's on the ground, in order to use it as fuel, then lo kani. So, echidami, again, how do you know which one it is? Shako rava rebe zutre adati de aro. If he takes the big ones and the small ones, then it's clear that he's clearing out the field to make the field usable. In that case, if he tells us he did it for the field, we're going to believe him. Shoko ravarve b'shofag zuktrei, if he takes only the big branches or the big items and leaves the small ones there, then adata detzive. It's clear he's doing it for the firewood, because otherwise, why would he leave over all the little stuff? It still impedes his ability to plant the field. If it impedes his ability to plant the field, then he hasn't done anything to the field, or he hasn't done anything to bikone the karko. So therefore, we look, in that case, it'd be mukha milsa. If he doesn't clear off everything, only takes the big ones, it's mukha milsa. It's clear that he didn't do it for the field. On the other hand, if he takes everything, we ask him. If he says, I did it for the field, then we believe him, because in that case, he did something that indicates that it's the case. If he tells us he took it for the wood, then again, doesn't help him in that case. Amar Shmuel, Haiman de itkal tikla. Someone who removes, over here, it's not the wording is strange, but the way the Rashbam and others explain it is that he's clearing off the michsholot. He's clearing off the takalot from the field. Now the Mishnah in Shviz and others use the word sokel, which means to clear off all the rocks, right, from the field, to take out the rocks. I don't know, that's what it sounds like they're doing over here. But either way, there's some sort of impediments on the ground, and he's removing them so that the plow can go. Right, but that's shakal here, which I don't know, that's not sokel, which I would have thought. Right here it seems tikla, which is, and he's using the word takala, the way the Rashbam is explaining it. I don't know how it fits exactly into the Aramaic. Adaita da'aro, koni. If he does it to clear the field off, to make it plowable now, then it works. Adate de Bei Dori. On the other hand, if he does it for the Bei Dori, now Bei Dori, according to the Rashbam, a Bei Dori is a Goren. He does it to flatten out the surface so that he can make a Goren, he can make it a pile, and he can be dash. He can do the process of finishing off the grains that he has harvested. Then he's not Kone, lo Kone. On the other hand, Tosos explains that the Bei Dori over here is that it's a place for behemot. That is, he makes it into a deer. The word deer, which is that he makes it into a corral to keep animals there. He's flattening it out so he can use it as a corral. So either way, if he does it again, if he's taking it, clearing the field in order to make it plowable and usable, then he's doing something to him attacking the field, then he's konin. The other hand, if he does it to make a goren, or he does it to make a corral there, then he's not konin. Hechidami. Again, how do you know? What's mukhamil so that he did it for this? So now, I'll read you the gears that we have in front of us. And then we'll discuss that there might be issues with it. Shaka mulya, b'shada b'natzo, adaita da'aro. If he takes from the, for instance, a field is not flat, it has high points and low points, I mean ditches and mountains or piles. So what does he do? He takes all the high points, clears them off, and fills in the low points. So there he's flattening the ground. So that makes it, then, in that case it would make it a case where it is plowable, and that's adaita da'aro. Because now he's made a totally flat area. Mulya b'mulya, natza b'natza. On the other hand, if you take the high points and you simply, say you have a pile, a large pile over there of dirt and that's blocking the way, you cut off the top and then you use that to fill in the sides around this pile. So you make a larger area that has this height, but that, not that you flatten the field entirely. And the same thing with a ditch. The ditch is there. Instead of taking the ditch and fully filling it in, what you do is you dig out the sides of the ditch and use that to fill in the middle, but so you create a larger area that is of a ditch. So now, in that case, we say that that's the Bei Dori. That's for a Goren, because there you have distinct areas which you are flattening out. You're not flattening the entire field, but distinct areas which you are flattening out. Now, that's the Girsa that we have, the way the Gemara greets. But the Gemara, for instance, the Bach points out in Moed Katan, reads exactly the opposite. And Tosfos mentions over here that the Rimi Orleans, the Rimi Orleans, had a question over. He says, "We know Anan Sada the Disha Tzarech Harbe Yoter Shavev Chalak. In order to a Goren, you need a much flatter surface and expanded area. So that would indicate just the opposite, like the Goren Baba Kamel, which is that when you have an extensive flat area, that's Mukhamil said he's doing the Goren. If you create areas that have large tracts that are flat, meaning that you level out the mountains to an area which is high, or level out the lower areas, then you have distinct patches which you can plant, and that will be for planting. So that's the alternative girsa, or the alternative over here, to our girsa, which indicates that the flatter area, right, has to do with the fixing of the land. Now the explanation of Tosfos, we said before, Bei Dori, which switches it from what the Rashbam says, which is for a Goren, to a corral, is because of this issue. He says, well, for a Goren, you need a much flatter area. So how could it be that the Gemara was suggesting that when you have slight patches that are flat, that's good for a Goren? So his answer is that Bei Dori is not a Goren. Bei Dori is a corral of Behemot. And in that area, you use distinct areas you can use for a corral. And the Rabbeinu Tam gives an interesting answer. He says that in their day, they used to use morigim, that they used to use like these tools, these kelim, to do the dash, not like us. So therefore, they didn't need such large tracts of flat area. But you see, the Tosfos is trying to be mamid ar girsa over here and explain it, right? Versus what the Moed Katan, when if you flip it, then you don't have all these questions based on the Gemara Moed Katan. Right now, v'amar Shmuel, ha'imon depotoch mayir ba'aro, adata da'ara koni. Adata de kavre lo koni. Person opens up a waterway into a field in order, again, here it's a viva chazaka for the field. If he's doing it to water the field, then he establishes a chazaka ownership and he's konin. Adata de kavre, he does it for the fish. Man, he wants water to come through to catch fish. He's creating some sort of pond or fish pond where he can catch fish. Lo koni. In that case, he's not konin. Echidami. Again, how do you know? What through his actions can indicate that? Patach trei bave. If he opens up one entrance and one exit for the water, he allows the water to enter the field and then exit on the other side, and it's clear he's doing it for the fish. Because if he wanted to water the field, he needs to keep the water in the field. The fact that he let it go out the other end of the field is indicative that he's looking for the fish that come through. Right? Chad bava, if he only opens up one side, meaning that he allows the water to come in and then remain in the field, then adatad da'ara. There it's clear that he's watering the field because he's not letting the water go out. If he simply wanted the fish, he would let the water go out and just catch the fish. The Rashbam over here notes that all these chazakot that we mentioned here, whether you're doing this in Ixtay Ger to take it from Hefker, or Matana Mecher, or Achim Shechoku, anybody wants to establish ownership over here, Kinyan. Are these good Kinyanim, or are these not good Kinyanim? And now, Hay Itada, the Achla Dikla Betaf Shicha. She went ahead and ate a Dekel, meaning Betaf Shicha. What's Taf Shicha? We just said before she was pruning branches, taking, you know, pieces off the Dekel. Tlesar Shnin, for 13 years. Then, Atahu Gavro, some guy shows up, and Rafik Ba Purta, or Rafik Tute Purta, he went ahead and he did a little hoeing, right, under the palm tree. Atah the Kamei de Levi, so they came for a lady, Vamai La Kamei de Marukva, some people was before Marukva, Ukme Biyode. He gave it to the man. Why? Atah Katsavka Kamei, she comes screaming in, Amala, Maya Vidlocha. Why did you, Maya Vidlocha, what are you doing? So she says, he said, what did I do to you? She says, Dalo achzik de maxa inche. What did I do to you? How did I hurt you over here? You didn't take possession of this field the way that normal people take possession of it. So because of that, you lost your right. You never established ownership over this field. Because you simply took branches off. You were not pruning the tree in order for the benefit of the tree. You were taking branches in order to feed your animals or do something else, burn firewood with it. So since you didn't do something in action, that was chazke inche, you don't get ownership. And then when this guy came along and worked the field, he got ownership over the field. So now the last one is Amarav, Atzar Tzura b'Nechzei Ager. Someone who draws a picture on the Nechzei Ager, Kana. So the Rav Lokoni, the Ginta, the Bei Rav, Elabitzurta, next to the base measures of Rav, there was a garden or Nechzei Ager that fell to him. And the way he took possession of it is the way he drew a nice picture on the Nechzei Ager and he took possession of it. Now, how is that different from the Gemara yesterday? We said yesterday that if you want to take possession of a platrin, you can draw besad sit, you can plaster the wall, or draw a design on the inside. It has to be an ama al ama and keneged petach. Over here, Rav says you can draw pictures, no qualification of ama al ama, no qualification of keneged petach. How come over there we required a significant amount plus visibility that you had ownership? And over here he says nothing. So the Rashbam says there's a difference here, because why? What was described over there and what was described over here? Over here, what was described is that he did a tsar tsura of tsurat chaya o'of. He drew pictures of animals. He drew a picture of, a chaya, an oaf, birds, whatever he drew over here. As opposed to over in the other case where he was siud, which is he plastered or cure, where he drew a design. Drew some nice flowers or something else that he draws there. So that's not a tsurat birya. So when you have a tsurat birya, but Stam, he calls it tzatzuim. Scribbles or doodles or designs that are not of significance. So tsurat chayau of, the Rashbam says, is significant in of itself. And therefore it's sufficient that it's one of them, and it doesn't have to be connected to petach or neg amanama. Just because it's so significant, that's enough by itself to demonstrate ownership. As opposed to when you're making just little designs or doodles, and then you're doing sid, there you have to do keneged petach, and you have to have alma to give it significance. That type of design needs significance over here.
What's the source?
He doesn't have, two things. He has to distinguish between tsur versus kiur. Kiur in many places is a design or some sort of pattern, as opposed to tsura, which is a tsura, is some sort of form, right? That's number one. And number two is... Right, tsura in general is some sort of form, tsar tsura. And then number two, tsura is like, even by letters, tsar tsura is that he's making a form of a letter. Also, I think that the fact that Gemara doesn't qualify Rav's statement over here, he has to come up with some distinction, right, that the Gemara doesn't qualify Rav's statement and say, amal ama and keneged hapetach. And that's the just important distinction between the Gemara that we saw before. Number two is, the Rashbam before explained, when it comes to Beidare, going to the Goren, why isn't the Goren a establishment of ownership? You're using the field. We said before, if you use the field, that's enough.
You're in the field for 10 years.
Right. Why isn't that a usage of the field? You're getting enough from the field. Is that the right? The Rashbam distinguishes and says it's important. We did say before that it has to be a significant action. Remember when you made the beds and slept in there? It has to be, number one, a significant action. And number two, it has to be something where you're getting hanah from the karka itself. It's that the karka itself is providing you hanah. So here, the Rashbam says about a gorin that when a person makes a goren, he's mekalkel the land. Why? Because you could have planted the land, and instead you're making a goren over here. And zeh, it's not metaking the land, but rather mekalkel. V'chol tikkun, listen to this lashon of the Rashbam, v'chol tikkun shesofo listor, eino elo kilkul. Anything that you do that eventually will be removed, or not is not a permanent action to the field, that is called a kilkul, and not a tikkun over here. And therefore, things like hoeing in the field, or watering the field, which are items that are not reversible, when you do them, they're permanent, right, additions to the field, that is considered a kinyan. On the other hand, a goren is not the ikar usage of the field. Why? What's a field for, in general, is to plant on. So when you do this, it's basically a, what we call, goren, right, arai. You're doing something that doesn't have permanence on the field. Since you're doing something that's only temporary, and you're taking it away from its major or ikar purpose, which is planting, that is called, right, the atid listor, something that eventually will be removed or not used in the permanent land. And that might answer your question about parking on the land. If you park on the land, that's not a permanent usage, it's not the best usage of the land.
This is talking about being mahzik from nechzei ager.
Or from a matana, from someone else also.
Really?
Yeah, the Rashbam says it's both. But he says, if you are going to permanently use the field as a goren, then he says that ein lecha kinyan, right, kavua, or yoter chazaka mizu. I mean, that it all depends on how you, if you're using the field in a way that's only temporary, like if you park on the field, and eventually someone's going to build a house on it, or someone's going to plant the field, then that is a tidli store, and it's a kilkul, because you're not allowing the field to be used for its permanent. But if you're going to make the field into a parking lot, and you park on the lot, that's a chazaka, according to the Rashbam. Same thing over here, the goren. If the goren is only a temporary way that you use the field, but its ikar usage is to build a house or to plant on it, then eventually this goren is going to be removed. And that the temporary usage as a goren is actually okarit from its ikar usage, and it's not a chazaka. Whereas if you're going to always use it as a goren, and that's really what the field's intended for, then that is a chazaka, because you're using the field the way the field is going to be used.
So the goren was permanent in the tree for 13 years. What's the definition of always?
Right.
She could be permanent for 99 years.
Tree. She wasn't acting as an owner. That's the main issue here, right? She was acting as someone, if you had a tree that was out in the fields, right, that nobody owned, you go there, you pick branches off of it, and you do it. Would you go and be Zomer? The branch, no, you wouldn't take care of a tree that's out in Hefgar and start pruning the tree so it grows better. You go out there, you pick some branches off what you need for your sukkah.
If she wanted to fuss up, she would have to trim it from all sides. And
right, right. So here we are saying that she didn't demonstrate ownership. She acted like it would a tree of Hefgar. She treated it like any tree of Hefgar. She didn't treat it as a owner. That's, I think, the distinction in her interactions. Even though it's for 13 years, you could be go every year to the fields here around Beit Shemesh, pick off branches to use for your sukkah. Does that mean you have ownership over the fields? No. I mean, that's an indication that you're treating it like Hefgar. And that's what she did over here. Also, she treated it like Hefgar. Right now.
If you park your car there for 20 years straight, you have a Bitcoin. If you poured asphalt down and poured asphalt down,
put a sign in front of
your car there, right. Put a sign, no parking.
Right, it's the same, right, same distinction. Very good. All right, now this next Gemara. Itmar, sedea misuyamet b'mitzareha. You have a field that is defined by its borders. Amarav, hun amarav, this is the position of Rav, came in shehikibash ba makush echad kana kula. One hit, one little work on that field, you get the whole thing. Because you worked in a field that has distinct borders, so you do a little bit of work in there, kone the whole field. Shmuel lo kana ela makom makusho bilvad. Shmuel says, wherever you worked, that's what you get. That's not considered a kinyan in order to be kone the whole area. It's kinyan for the area that you worked on. So again, we have a principle, Rabbi Shmuel, when it comes to Hilchos Mamonos, who the halacha is like? The halacha is Shmuel b'Mamonos. Again, the Rashbam points out here, the halacha is not like Shmuel. It says the halacha is not like Shmuel, but rather Kirav. And we're going to see at the end of today's daf, that Rav Nachman, Paskins halacha, Rav Nachman's a Dayan, Paskins halacha like Rav, and therefore the Rashbam says that that's the case over here. Now, the Rashbam says over here that this again is qualified, this is only b'nechzei ager. When it comes to buying from someone else, we said already that...
We said already
the kesef. Right, the kesef defines how much. Very good. So this, the Gemara in Kedushin says, that the whole world is one plateau, one field, and therefore if you do any work, you can be kone in multiple fields, and how much you kone is defined by the money that you gave. By next year, obviously there's no money exchanging hands, and that's why the problem exists. So this Machlos and Rav Shmuel simply relates to Nechzei HaGer over here. So Mar says, V'enisim Yisrim Emet B'mitzarel. What happens if the field is not defined by its borders? I mean, that it's an open field. It's in a large valley where there are numbers of fields. Then, when you go ahead and Machlokas Rashbam and Tosfos, what the Gemara's question here is. Gemara's question is, if you do one makush, if you do some sort of action, right, how much are you koneh in a field that has no defined borders? Or, is the question here, if you have a field that borders, how are you koneh it? I mean, that's the Machlokas bin Rashbam and Tosfos over here, how to read this Gemara. Right, because...
What's the answer? What's the answer? You can see. What's the nafkamina? The question is tachlis. If you don't have, if there aren't any borders, what do you have to do to be caught in the whole field?
Right, so that's the question. The Rashbam says, what you're suggesting, the Rashbam says, if I want to be koneh field, and I don't have defined borders, and makush isn't going to work here, because if you hit here, what do you know? You don't know what it's relating to. There's no relationship. So that's what the Rashbam, we'll read it that way first. Since David brought it up, we'll read it that way first. So he says, Adkama, how much you have to do, what type of chazaka do you have to exert to show ownership? So Amar Rapapak, Azil Taira Shorei V'Hadar. That's to be the plowing of a shore and its return. But basically, the Rashbam says, is you have to plow two rows. You have to plow one way and back, which gives you two tlamim, two furrows in the field. Now, if you plow from edge to edge, then you get the entirety of the rochav, it depends which way you're plowing, right? The orech of the field. You plow those two lines, you get that plus the whole extension that goes the other way. So that's enough. If you plow two rows to the full extent of the rochav, or the full extent of the orech, either one, doesn't matter, you'll get the entirety of that rochav or orech, according to the, and then the opposite dimension, you'll get the whole field. That's the way the Rashbam reads the Gemara, basically what you had said, David. Tosfos asks a question. He says, first of all, why do you have to go two ways? I mean, if the whole problem over here is defining how big the field is, then one way should be sufficient.
You don't know how...
But that you also don't know according to the Rashbam. The Rashbam says you have to go back and forth on the same direction. So you never know the other way. Yeah, you never know the other way.
Not
just verify.
Right. But when you do go to another row, you've moved in the perpendicular direction.
Indicate which direction you're going. Very good. So that's, I think, the Rashbam would have to say, that it gives you indication, this is the end of the field, this is the border, and therefore the field will extend the other way. The Rashbam says it has to be the Sfato. He's doing it on the edge of the field. So he is doing it at one end of the field. He is doing it at Sfato. And I think what Svi's saying is true, that when you go to the next step, the problem with the Rashbam still is that, fine, he does two, but he still doesn't help you extend how far. Right.
But also tells you... That if you do this safa and turn around, it also tells you that you don't expect any more of that direction.
Right, that is correct. I mean, you've defined three of the borders, you're missing the fourth border. Basically, that's what plowing in two furrows gives you three borders and leaves out the fourth border, according to the Rashbam. The way Tosfos learns, and he says, this is the same question that the Gemara has before. Meaning that before we had Makush Echad, you get the entirety of the borders. Over here, Tosfos says, what the Gemara wants to know, if you do a Makush Echad in an undefined space, right? How much do you acquire with that makush? So his answer is, right, kashir midat telem, the amount of a furrow. But you did midat telem kamaya orech shalo. They knew how long that was. So one makush in an undefined area gives you an expanse for how much a furrow would be, how much a telem would be, how much a shore would go.
Telem is like a row.
Yeah.
In a row, which direction?
It seems in all directions from your makush, I would say that's what Tosfos is saying. Basically a plus sign from where you started. And that's the amount of distance you would get was the amount of a normal plowing, how far a shore would go. And that was a defined area. It's like the Torah, right? By Kivrat HaSadevot, right? Rashi talks about that by Rachel, when Yaakov buries her. It says, Od, right? Kivrat HaSadeh, right? Baderach Levo Efrata. So what the Rashi over there says, what's that? Kivrat HaSadeh says it's the normal amount of a field, the extent of a field. But it's a defined term. So that's what Tosfos says over here. That a plowing of a shore was a defined term in their day. Right? So when you do one makush, that's what you get in an undefined space. The amount that a person would plow. Whereas when you do it in an area that has mitzvah, has borders, you get the entirety of the area. So that's the difference between the Rashbam is reading this as, how do you define what you're taking possession of? Tosfos is saying, when you do the same makush that you did with an undefined space, how much do you get? And this is defining the amount of space you get, rather than you defining your balus over here. Right now, I'm Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. This next sugya, it's an unbelievable sugya, has major implications, shas implications. We'll try to tackle it. We saw it a little bit on Chaf Aleph and Bet, but hopefully we'll get to do a little ian on it now and look into this sugya. So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Nichsei Ovdei Kochavim Arein Kemidbar. The possessions of an Ovdei Kochavim are like a midbar, right, which is hefker. Anybody who takes possession of them first gets them. Now, obviously, this is not talking about a case that right? All property of goyim is free for all. That's not the what the Gemara is discussing here. But no, the kesa is a transaction. A person is purchasing something from a goy. So we saw until now, when you're purchasing from a Jew, what is the? How do we know when the transaction is done? How do we know when the transaction is done? It's the shtar. The shtar or the chazakah are what define the end of the transaction. You give kesef, we said unless they specify that the kesef is koneh, by just by giving kesef, even though kesef is a form of kinyan in the Mishnah, nevertheless, we said ba'atra, in a place where they normally give shtarot, or in a place where they have to do something to define that, simply giving money is not enough to end the transaction. The transaction is ended or irreversible when you either give a shtar, or you do a chazakah. You do something in the field, and that's what we've been discussing all through the Gemara here. How do you, and what types of chazakot define ownership? So now, my timeless. The Gemara says, when it comes to a non-Jew, once he gets his cash, he's done. He thinks the transaction is over.
Money.
Right? Once he got his money, he's done. So basically, he basically disowns or disassociates himself with the property. He got his money, that's all he wanted. He got his money, now he leaves the field. Israel lokani at the matishkar the other. On the other hand, the Jew's working with his mindset as a Jew, which is what? That they...
Star.
The shtar. He needs a shtar in order to be the transaction complete. So he doesn't think he owns it until he gets his shtar. So what do you have? You have this interim period where what? The property is basically hefker. The guy has said, my transaction's over. I don't own it anymore. I got my money. It's out of my possession. On the other hand, the Jew doesn't think hasn't taken possession of it because he thinks in his mind that his possession is only what? Once he gets his shtar. So you have an interim period or like a no man's land or a gray area where the land is owned by nobody. Basically, it's left in a hefker belt. So since it's in hefker, if another Jew comes in and is machzik in the property in that interim period, he takes possession of the property. That's the statement of Shmuel over here. Now the question is... Yes.
Or is it theoretic?
No, he will get possession of it. We'll get to what his status is or what it's a huge machlokas Rishonim, what the status of this Jew who does such a thing is, and that's what will come down to why it's a huge shas sugya. Now, why is it the case that the goy, right, when he gives up his property, when as soon as he gets his cash? So the Rashbam claims, right, that kol kinyano shel ovdei kochavim bekesef. That's their kinyan. The major kinyan that's afforded to non-Jews is kinyan kesef. Since kinyan kesef is the main vehicle which they use in order to make kinyanim, therefore, as soon as he gets his kesef, he's done. Tosfos shows, and we've seen this together. Actually, we saw the Gemara in Baba in the end of Baba Metzia. We saw the Gemaras that show that the kinyan of a goy is not only by kesef. The kinyan, the ikur kinyan was actually kinyan mishicha. So kinyan of mishicha is the ikur kinyan, not kinyan kesef. We say, kona miyad amitecha. Miyad amitecha is davar nikne miyad yad, which was a kinyan kesef. And over there we said, that's only amitecha. But for non-Jew, it was only through a kinyan mishicha. So that's what the Rabbeinu Tam says. The ikur kinyan is with the mishicha. So what are you talking about of kesef over here? So why does it over here it say that the goy gives up ownership when it's kinyan kesef? He says, "Hainu mishum de matzino b'dei chachavim kinyan kesef be'efron ushtar v'adei lo kana b'dei chachavim." Because over there we find that Ephron used kinyan kesef with Abram, so we have such an example, right? And we know that shtar is not relevant to a non-Jew because shtar doesn't work for them at all. So if that's the case, there's only two things left here: there's a kinyan kesef and there's a shtar. So which one is the goy going to rely on? He's going to rely on the kesef which works. He's not going to rely on the shtar that doesn't work. So that's why he gives up ownership. So according to the Rashbam, it's because Iker Kinyan for the goy is through kesef, and that's why he gives up ownership so he gets his money. Tosa says, no, that's not the reason. The reason over here is because there is no other Kinyan that's going to be functional over here for him. He has a Kinyan, kesef, and shtar. So what? Shtar doesn't work. So the only thing he has is kesef. So that's why he gives up ownership when he gets his kesef. Right, but that's not means it's the Iker Kinyan. The Iker Kinyan is Meshicha. It happens to be here that they're functioning with Kesef, which also works in this instance. Right, so now, David asked an important question, which we'll come back to. I'll point it out, which is this Jew who jumps in and does such a thing, there are two questions you have to answer. Number one, is he doing a good thing or not? Does he have a right to do such a thing, to jump in and take the property? Number one. Number two, does he have to compensate the first Jew? When he takes the field, does he have to compensate the first Jew who lost money now? Because he paid out money and now he's out the money. Does he have to compensate him? That is Machlokas Rishonim, which we'll come back to in a second. I want to read through the Gemara and then we'll come back to that Machlokas Rishonim. So now, the Matzah of the day, Hilkach. So the Gemara says, because the goy gives up possession when he gets his money, and the Jew waits for the shtar, they become hefker in the interim period. By the Rav Yosef, I said to Rav Yosef, did we all really say this? Right, what do you have? The law of the land governs. And the law lands, the law of the land is that a shtar, you know, without a shtar, you don't get the land. So how could you say that Shmuel is saying over here, he gets his kesef and he gets a possession? What do you mean? The law of the land is you get a shtar, that's when you give up possession. So Dina Machus Dina is very interesting here. The Rashi, when we discussed this, when we did the Gemara in Baba Kama and Dina the Machus Dina, what's the reason Dina Machus works? So we quoted over here the Rashi from Baba Vasra. This is the Rashi over here. You know what he says? You know why Dina the Machus Dina works? If you look down at the Rashi, he says, Komisim Varnoniot Uminagot Shemishpate Melachim Shugilim Hanig Machudam Dina. Why? Shkol Bnei Bachut Mekablim Lehem Mirtzonam Chukei Hamelech Umishtadav Ilkach Din Gamurho. It's a social contract. Right, people come in, you come live here, everybody agrees to abide by the rules of the community or of the king where they live. And everybody's a social contract. That's how Dina Mechusa works according to the Rashbam. This is one of the ways that we quote it, and I just want to point out to you because we had done it in Baba Kama, but this is the reasoning according to Rashbam of Dina Mechusa Dina. It's a social contract, it's an agreement that when you live here, you agree to abide by the laws of the community. All right, now, Amalei, Analo Yadana. I don't know the answer to your question. Aval Uvda Havo, I do know about a case that was Bedora de Reuta. Either that's the name of a place, or it's a Kfar Shil Ro'im. That's either one of them. Bisrael de Zavan Aram Ovid Kochavim. He purchased land from a non-Jew. Ata Yisrael Achvina, another Jew came in, the Rafak Baporta, and he did exactly what that. He did a chazak in the interim. Adel Kamei de Rabbi Yehuda, Ukma Biyada. And he went ahead and he gave it to this second Jew, the Sheni, Biyada the Sheni. Now who's Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda learned by Rav and then learned by Shmuel. So Rabbi Yehuda is probably paskening the halacha like his Rebbe Shmuel. And you see that what? That the paskens based on Shmuel's first statement. That when you take the kesef and there's no shtar, there's this interim period where you can be machzik in it. So he says, Abai responds to him, he says, Amalei Dura Deruta Kamart. He says, you're talking about that case by the Dura Derdarta or the Kfar Ro'im? Hatam Bagay Mitamre Havu. Over there, they were hiding. They were actually trying to escape from taxation. Deinu kufay ulova yavi taxka the malka. They weren't paying their property taxes. Umalka mar mandiyav taxka lechulara. Whoever right own pays taxes gets the land. So over here, they were trying to sell land that they didn't really own. Why didn't they own it? Because they were trying to escape from the king and paying the taxes. So since they were hiding out, they kept trying to, every time the tax collector came, they ran away. So they tried to make sure they didn't pay taxes. As soon as they got a buyer, they took the buyer. Now, they really didn't own the land. Why didn't they own the land? Because they weren't paying taxes on it. And the Dina de Machusa Dina, which we saw before, we see in the Gemara above Matzia, whoever pays the tax gets the land. So this guy, first guy comes and tries to purchase it from them. Then the second guy comes along, does a chazak on it, and says, I'm going to pay the taxes. So according to Dina Machusa Dina, he's the rightful owner over here. The person who's purchasing it was purchasing it from a non-rightful owner. He's purchased basically from a, quote-unquote, a stolen property. And therefore, that's why the case worked over there. Now, the question is the halacha like Shmuel or not? Right? Because, so the Rashbam discusses it. The Rabbeinu Chanan, others say that the halacha is not like him because of the question. We have a question of Dina Machusa Dina, which is not answered. Therefore, the halacha should not be like Shmuel. Again, the Rashbam says no. And he says, no, the halacha is like Shmuel over here. Right? The halacha is...
They're both like Shmuel.
Right, I'm saying the halacha like Shmuel, the first statement of Shmuel. I'm saying, if you say the Dina de Machusa Dina of Shmuel, can you paskin like the first Shmuel, which says that when he comes in between and he takes the property in between, can you paskin like
that? Why is the Gemara asking to steal in between Shmuel?
They are, that's what the Gemara asked him. That's what Abaye brought it as a stira, and Rabbi Yosef didn't have an answer, and he gave him an answer from a case. He brought him a case law. Then Rabbi responds to him, the case is not relevant. So he's saying, what is the answer? So that means that Shmuel is a stira. And we know we pass in Dina Machus and Dina of Shmuel. So do we pass him like the other Shmuel? So the Rabbeinu Chanan and others say, no, that's it. Shmuel's nidcheh here because of the second statement of Shmuel. The Ashbam and Tosos say, no, the halacha is like Shmuel in both cases. And you have to answer. The Gemara didn't have an answer here, but you have to answer or reconcile between them. And the answer is, or the answer for Abaye, is that he holds that the Dina de Machus and Dina of having a star is not a real Dina de Machus and Dina. I mean, the underlying assumption of the question of Abaye to Rav Yosef is that Dina Machusa Dina, you have to have a shtar to complete the transaction. Abaye's answer is basically, Rav Yosef's answer is that that's not the case. Dina Machusa Dina is not that. A shtar is not Dina de Machusa Dina. That's not the case. And that's how you reconcile Shmuel. That's not one of the, there is no stira because that's not Dina de Machusa Dina. Right? And therefore, and now we're going to see Rav Nachman. So that's it. So Omar, Rav Huna Zav and Aram Me'ovid Kochavim. Huna bought property from Me'ovid Kochavim. Ata Yisrael Achel, Rafik Baporta. Another Yisrael, same case here, it goes in, works on it. Ata Tamei Rav Nachman, they come to Rav Nachman, the Dayan, Ukma Biyade, gave it to the second Jew, not Rav Huna. I'm like, Ma'adateich, what's your reasoning? Damar Shmuel, Nikse Ovid Kochavim, Arim Kamidbar, Chol Machzik Behem Zacha. You're passing like that Shmuel. Lavili Mar Ki Yidach to Shmuel. Pass me like the other Shmuel. Damar Shmuel, Lo Kanel Makom Makusho Bilvad. What about the other Shmuel? We had three dinim from Shmuel over here. We had a lot of dinim from Shmuel. Three dinim that are relevant over here. Number one, that when the goy sells it, he takes his cash, it's hefker until the shtar is written. Number two, dinim machusadina. Number three, Shmuel said that when you do a makush on hefker, you only get makum makushu bavat. So go Shmuel l'shitate. He came in and tried to take possession of hefker over here. What did he do? Rafak bapurta. He worked on it a little bit. So why does he get possession of the whole land? Let him only get the little piece. Samalei, Bahai Anna, Kishmatin, Svirle. He says over there, I hold like Dama Ravuna Marav. I hold like what you said over there. Kevin Shinikushba Mukashekad Kanakula. I hold like Ravuna Marav. That what? That you get the whole possession. So that's how the Rashbam proves, by the way, that even though generally the din is like Shmuel, that here the loch is like Rav, because Rav Nachman's passing like Rav. Right? Here he's passing like Rav, that what? One makush gets you the whole field. Number one. Number two, he's passing like the first Shmuel that says that if you're machzik in hefker, you get what?
So he's not pasuk gilad machuta. We say that he is pasuk gilad machuta because the
shtar. So why didn't that, exactly? So that's the question here. That's the Rashbam brings up the question. Why didn't Rav Huna say to him, what about the other Rav Huna of dina machusadina? How come he didn't bring the other shita Shmuel? So that's what the Rashbam answers over here. You can see the second line of Rashbam here. Halo matzah the meimar lavidly mark idach the Shmuel damar dina machusadina. Since he agrees that Shmuel made the first statement, which is what? That if you buy with money, it's hefker until you get the shtar. Then I the next say, hayen kemidbar, akorchok zakuk ata v'tareitz delo tikshe Shmuel d'Shmuel. If that's the case, if he holds like the first statement of Shmuel, he has to somehow reconcile between Dina de Machus Dina and the first statement of Shmuel. So how do you reconcile between them? It's not Dina de Machus Dina in this case. And if he does that, then he has no claim. He can't make a claim of Dina de Machus Dina. Okay, that's the end of the Gemara. What I want to spend time now on is on the some Ion Sabex, which has unbelievable ramifications, including Shiduchim and other things, which is, what's the status of the individual here? The Rashbam over here says, this individual goes and jumps on his friend's property and takes it. He says that even though he's Kuneh, he says, Nira be'enai da'isheni Rasha Mikre. It's called a Rasha. Someone who does this is a Rasha. So you asked me before, is he doing something good? Should he do this? The answer is, if he does it, it works. He's kone and he makes a full square opinion on it. On the other hand, when he does it, he's Nikra Rasha. He is a Rasha in that case. And therefore, why? Because it's lo garem eme ani hamapech becharura. Ani hamapech becharura is a case that we've seen before. We discussed it in the... Right, in cases, in other places, in the Gemara, in Kedushin, and we discussed it before earlier in the Masechta here. The Ani Mabapech Bechorora is an Ani who is already looking at something that he's going to take. If someone else comes in, swoops in to try to take it away from him, then he's Nikarosha. Then he's done something wrong. Same thing over here. You know this individual is transacting with the guy. You know he has his eye on it. He's paid money for it. And you come in, swoop in and grab it away from him. The Rashbam says it's exactly the same case. An ani that's dealing with something already, and he's already trying to take possession of it. And you come and swoop in and take it away from him. That's Nikra Rasha. And therefore over here, he also be called a Rasha. So that's the position of the Rashbam. Now, the Rashbam quotes others that Mifashim the most merely actually lokeh rishon, that he has to pay money. That he has to pay money to the first one, and the Rashbam says, leave me any reklal. There's no connection between them. He can be called, right, he's a Rasha, but he doesn't have to return the money over here. So that's what the Rashbam explains. The guy takes possession, sorry, the possession works, he's called a Rasha, he doesn't have to pay any money. That's the Rashbam's position. The Rabbeinu Tam questions the position of the Rashbam. The major place with the Rashbam where he talks about it is on Chaf Aleph Amud Bet. On Chaf Aleph Amud Bet, the Gemara was discussing the issue of Hasagas Gvul. When it comes to working, when it comes to artisans or craftsmen, what's considered Hasagas Gvul? Over there, the Gemara says that you're not allowed to set up fish nets next to someone else who has fish nets over there. So the Gemara, the Tosfos over there, asks on the spot, wait a minute, why aren't you allowed to set up fish nets next to someone else? Why does the Rabbeinu Tosfos have a problem with that? That's because the Shitas Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with the Rashbam. The Rabbeinu Tam says the Rashbam is wrong here. This individual is not a Rasha at all. Why? I can prove it to you from the Mishnah and Peah. The Mishnah and Peah says that an Ani, who throws a sheet over all the Peah in order to acquire the Peah, right, does it work? The Mishnah says no. Why? We remove him from the Peah. But the Rabbeinu Tam says, the Mishnah over there doesn't say he's called a Rasha for doing that. The Mishnah said he didn't do a Chazak, he didn't do a Kinyan. His failure was that he didn't do a Kinyan. If he did a Kinyan where he used, he picked it up, he would have had it. But the problem over there is that he tried to kone it in a way that's not kone. How come he's not called a Rasha over there when he goes and throws a sheet over all the pan, takes it away from all the other Aniyim? Why isn't he called that? So the Rabbeinu Tam makes a distinction between Hefker and Mekach u'Memkar, but it's a distinction like this. If the item can be found nowhere else, then there is no din of Ani Mehapech B'Charara. If this is a unique item that you cannot replace and not get anywhere else, then it's first come, first serve. And even if someone else is looking at it already, because, right, you can take possession of it because you're not going to find such a piece of land or a piece of property anywhere else. On the other hand, if it's a transactional in the way that you're buying this piece or you're buying this thing and you can go somewhere else and buy it, and you go ahead and take it away from this individual, in that case, it's called Ani Amapech B'Chara, and there you'll be a Kol Darasha. So the problem for the Rabbeinu Tam with the Gemara and Chof Aleph is what? He's setting up nets with fish. So what do we say? You're not allowed to set up nets over here. Why is that the case? Fish are Hefker. You can't find fish everywhere. I mean, these are unique, these fish. He put his net here. Why does he have to move away from this individual? Why is there a problem? Ani Amapech B'Chara. So that's why the Tosfos over there has to ask the question on the position of the Rabbeinu Tam. And the Rabbeinu Tam says that he has to explain over here that the case of the fish is unique, either because it's umanus, because it's his craft, it's his parnasa, therefore we don't let him impinge, or we have to say that you could find fish everywhere. Since you could go to another location, find a hole and find fish, right? That's the case. So the Gemara's answer, which is that you already own the fish, because of the food that you feed them, they come to your nets, feed them. But that's what the Rabbeinu Tam has to answer. This machlokas between them has major nafkinas la'alocha. When are you not allowed to break up a deal? Someone is negotiating a deal. When can you not break up a deal? According to the Rashbam, if you break up a deal, even in Mekach Memkar, even though you could, even though it's a hefker, it's a unique item, if you go and take possession, you break up something, you are what? You are called a Rasha. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, that's not a Rasha. Something unique. Everybody has to have a right here to go in and get it, and you're not called a Rasha in that case. That's the case. Now, the Ramban rejects the Rabbeinu Tam at end. He says that the Rabbeinu Tam's proof from the Peah is not right. Why is his proof from Peah not right? Because over there, when the individual throws down his sheet on the Peah, he's mapech. Everybody's involved with the Peah. It's not Hefker over there. It's not something where he's coming to possession. It's something unique, and therefore he's not called a Rasha. He's not, over there, the case is that all the Aniyim are looking for Peah. So they're all involved in the Peah over there. So it's something there where he is, right? It is a problem. When he throws the sheet over there, this is no proof that when it's Hefker, right, you don't have a quote, Nikra Rasha. Over there, the reason that it doesn't work is because all the Aniyim are trying to be Mahapech in the Peah. And since they're all trying to get possession of it, you're throwing the sheet over it doesn't give you any more rights than the other individuals who are there. Everybody has equal rights because they're all looking for Peah. So that's why you're abrogating their rights when you throw the sheet over it, and therefore we masalik you because everybody is mahapech. So Ramban disagrees. The Rashba over here connects the two. If you're called a Rasha, you have to return the money. If you're not called a Rasha, you don't have to return the money. It's clear that the Rashba, when he questions the Rashba over here, doesn't connect. He says you're a Rasha, but you don't have to pay money. The Rashba sees a clear connection between the two of them. Now, the question comes up. There's an Igros Moshe that questions. Someone wrote him a question. Until what point is a shidduch considered final or not final? When can you go in and break up a shidduch and take the girl? Hey, here, there's a shidduch over here. The guy sees this, says, I like this girl. They're already talking, marriage. When can you go, up to what point is it considered okay to go in and break up the marriage? Right, so now the Igros Moshe over here makes a chakira, a nice chakira, where he explains the difference between a psak halacha between the Rambam and the Radach. He says in with the way the Ramah Paskins Ibishem Radach says that there are two ways to look at Ani Mahapech B'Charara. What's the problem over here? So one problem over here is whose rights are being abrogated over here. So when it comes to Mekach U'Memkar, right, when you come in and try to swoop in and break up the deal by Mekach U'Memkar, then when you break up this deal, who loses out? who loses out. It's individuals trying to negotiate over here. Do you, if we stop you from breaking up the deal, do you lose out over here? The answer is no, because you can go buy it somewhere else. So whose rights are being abrogated over here? The one who is already in negotiations. So over there we call you a Rasha because you're in Bech Rara. On the other hand, when it comes to Hefker, whose rights are being abrogated? If the one who's trying to take possession of the Hefker, he's what? He's hurting everybody else. Because now nobody else can come in and take possession of it. So whose rights are being abrogated? Everybody else besides the individual who's trying to take possession of it. They're being hurt more because now they're blocked from coming in and taking this unique item. So over there we say, go ahead and take the item. The other way to look at it over here has to do with kinyan. Has to do with what do you need to establish a kinyan over here. When it's a case of mekach u'memkar, it's a case of mekach u'memkar, there's an individual who's trying to sell it to you. Right? And then it's ani yamapech, when you go ahead and you're mahapech b'charura, when you go ahead and you're trying to, when you're taking possession of it, you're already, by the time you're already, you know, working over it and looking over the situation, over there, already the deal's reaching its final stages, and that's enough to establish that there is a real negotiation, a real connection to the property, because someone's trying to sell it to you. On the other hand, when it comes to hefker, you're simply touching mahapek b'chara, trying to reach it or trying to do something with it. Your interaction with it is not enough already to establish ownership or establish full possession over it, because we have to wait until you establish a kinyan over here. There's no other party that's giving you rights over here or trying to establish rights with you over here. And therefore, until you establish, just because you did a little bit over here, it doesn't make anything. A small tircha or a little bit that you do is not enough to indicate ownership. What's the nafka meaning between them? What happens if you find something on sale? There's a field that's being sold for a great price, and you can't find that field anywhere else. So the Rabbeinu Tam says in that case, or the Ramah Paskins, B'shem Aradach, that over there, you are allowed to go in and swoop in and take it. Why? Because it's unique. This property is the only one that's been sold at that price. So you can go in and take it. So that's according to Rav Moshe. What's that the explanation? That's like the explanation of whose rights are being abrogated. When a field is being put on sale and super cheap, who's losing out the most here by your being in negotiations? It's the other parties who don't have ability to get in and buy it at this low price. So therefore we say, let them go in and you're not called a Rasha in that case. Whereas, according to the Ramban says when it's on sale or super cheap, you're not allowed to go in and buy it. Because you can buy that same property somewhere else. Oh, the price is higher. That's too bad. Why? So the Rav Moshe says, because the Ramban holds like the other tzad, which is that once you start to be mahapik, once you exert some effort in a negotiation, that already brings you to the point where the deal is, right, the deal is almost sealed, or it's almost done there. So that since you're already far along, doesn't matter that it's a cheaper price. Since there are two parties involved, and negotiations reach this level, therefore you can't go in and break up the deal. Whereas by Hefker, again, that little tircha is not enough to establish ownership. So over there, again, the Ramban Paskin is what? And that's that the Shach brings down Hashem Ramban, that you're not allowed to break up the deal when it's cheap, just because it's cheap. So the Ramban is suggesting that the problem of Mekach Memkar is a problem that you're already in negotiation, and that already indicates effort and tircha to bring it along, and you have two parties, therefore you reach the point where it's irreversible. Whereas by the case of, according to the Ramah, who's quoting the Ramah over here, is that the defining factor is whose rights are being abrogated. In a case where it's super cheap, the other people are now losing out because they can't get in and make a deal, and that'll be like hefker, and you can come in and break it up.
Rav Moshe is very sensitive to the point that when it comes to ani ma'apech b'charura, that there are actually two parties involved. There's also the mocher, and also in this case, in the shidduch, there's the woman that's involved. And you have to be very careful here, because the more that we extend the rights of the buyer or the individuals mimshadich, this girl, then we also hurt or abrogate the rights of the mocher or the girl that's in the shidduch over here. So Rav Moshe says you have to be sensitive when it comes to ani ma'apech b'charura. We have to do it. We can't make it ridiculous where if a woman starts to speak to a person about a shidduch, then she's precluded from having any other shidduchim. Can't be that a mocher who enters or starts to enter negotiations with an individual, now he's precluded from selling it to anyone else. That gives you an outcome that is ridiculous. So therefore, Rav Moshe says we have to find that balance between the two, where the ani ma'apech b'charura locks in a deal once the deal is done, but it does not make it so early that the seller or the woman are disadvantaged here, and also doesn't make it too late whereas someone can always break up the deal and then no deals are ever final. And that's what Moshe is discussing here when it comes to shiduchim.
What's the answer by shiduchim? So the Moshe says by shiduchim that it depends how far along the shiduch is. If it's reached the point by which they already made the tanaim, And they made the Tnaim already, or at a point where they signed the Shtar, then already there's a problem with breaking it up. Even though the Shtar doesn't have Tokef, I mean in terms of Chush and Mishpat, nevertheless they could still back out of it, it's only Dvarim Ba'alma. Nevertheless, there's a Cherim. There's a Cherim for anybody who walks away from a Shidduch. So if there's a Cherim and someone who walks away from a Shidduch, therefore, when you walk, if over here, you've already reached the point where there's a cherem, breaking it up would be classified as a problem of anim abech b'charura. Because you're breaking up something which has reached the point where the transaction is basically quote-unquote done. It's done from two perspectives. One is that you're going to cause the woman to violate the cherem if you take her away. And number two is that the cherem itself establishes that it's anim abech b'charura. So that's the way Rav Moshe says. Then, a state where they're just meeting and they haven't come to any conclusions, Rav Moshe says over there that you can break it up, no problem. Why? Because of the idea that a woman is unique. Every woman is unique, and therefore it's like a case of hefker. And since she's like, in the sense of hefker, I mean that it's a unique property. Therefore, you can go in and break it up. It's not the din of ane ameapech becharura. At least according to the explanation of the Rabbeinu Tam and the way that the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch brings it down, that in that case we say you're allowed to go in. It's a mitziyah. You can go in and take it. So in that case, you can break up the shidduch. The Rav Moshe deals with cases in between, which is what happens if they reach, how final a stage do they have to reach? For instance, today, he says in modern days, where people don't write shtarim, or shtarot, when they get to the point where they have a final shidduch. So the Rav Moshe says that it has to do with when they're called chasen v'kala. Right, what's their din of being chasen and kala? Once it becomes, once they reach the point where there's nothing left to decide, or no negotiations left, even though there's no shtar, if they're already called chasen v'kala, then there's a cherim. If there's a cherim, there's a problem anim v'apach chara. So Rav Moshe says that's the cutoff point. The cutoff point is when are they known as chasen v'kala? That kind of a point. And when will they know, at least publicly, as Chazan Kala? He says, for sure, if they're known publicly as Chazan Kala, then it's a problem breaking it up. If they already agreed, but they haven't told everybody else, and they're already Chazan Kala, but it's not well known, there he says it's a Safek. And over here, we say Safek Yisura, because it's a Cherem, it should be Machmir. A person should be Machmir not to break up in that case, the Shidduchim. So that's, he says, the cutoff point for us in modern day, where the defining point is when they're known as Chasen and Kala. Over there, it's not breaking it up. It's breaking it up at that point would already be considered Ani Mapech B'chara, and you would be in violation or Nikra Rasha if you went ahead and you broke up a Shidduch in that instance. All right, we'll stop here.